Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
And it's the Tornado, Tony Benigal.
And we have another action-packed Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show for you tonight. We have a former guest back on again, a guy by the name of Tony Luis.
What was the name again?
Tony Luis, L-U-I-S.
Oh, yeah. I remember it's called like Louis, though, isn't it?
What?
Is it spelled like Luis and he pronounces it Louis? Or is it spelled like Louis and he pronounces it Luis?
I think he pronounces it Luis. But it's L-U-I-S. It's up there from Canada. 17-1 with 7 knockouts. He's got a big bout coming up on the 17th of January against a guy named Ivan Redcatch, who is 15-0 with 13 knockouts. You may remember one of his big latest fights was on ESPN. It was his only loss against Jose Hernandez. He's 13-6-1. That was from the Turning Stone Resort Casino in Verona, New York. And his father threw in the towel. He was down in the eighth round and looked like he was able to recover and looked at the ref, and then next thing you know, the towel comes in. So you might remember it under those circumstances, but we had a good interview with him before that fight, I think. And now he's got another big fight coming up. He has a couple six-round wins since that fight, unanimous decisions over a journeyman named Maurice Gochko, who was 21-37-2 at the time of their fight, fought him up in Quebec. Then he fought Rafael Luna, who was 4-5-2 in New York, both unanimous decision wins. So this big comeback fight here. In a big time. This is a real tough opponent, considering the last two guys he fought. Another undefeated guy he's going to have to beat to keep the win streak going. But trying to see what other fights are on that card. We got a lot of boxing to discuss, that's for sure. We've got, obviously, the big upset, if you want to call it an upset. The problem ended up having some problems on Saturday, and Marcos Maidana tuned him up pretty good.
Yeah, that was, you know, honestly, Broner is so publicly despised that I've never seen somebody get so much fun made out of him from a loss than I have from Broner.
Yeah. Well, he ran right out of the ring. Man, that's
He got his tail kicked out of the ring. I didn't get to see it live. So it was, because of the weather, I was staying over at friend's house after our shift at work was done, and he didn't have showtime. So I was checking my Facebook status, and I remember somebody saying, like, what the hell was that, like 19 seconds? And at first, I thought it meant the fight was over in 19 seconds, but no, it was just going to get knocked out for the first time. And then the next day, like, I was looking at all the public updates, and I've never seen somebody so publicly despised having that many, especially in boxing anymore, which doesn't seem like it's as mainstream as it used to be. Like, I see stuff the Dallas Cowboys blew the lead last week, and Tony Romo threw an interception. And I saw stuff going all over with people bashing Tony Romo. And, you know, of course, I found it humorous because I'm an Eagles guy, even though they lost. But I saw so much stuff, and not just from boxing guys. I mentioned the one thing at work that Monday, and the one guy pulled up more cartoons on his phone making fun of him. And my favorite was Broner before the fight. And, like, we had a picture of him standing there with his chest puffed out, and he's like, I'm going to beat that boy so bad he'll be speaking English. And then you see Broner on the canvas, like, hanging through the ropes, and you see him, like, with a word bubble speaking Spanish.
Right. Well, he got put in his place, that's for sure. And you know, that Maidana is looking pretty good. He's coming at him from some unorthodox angles, throwing some mean-looking hooking punches. Just punishing him. Body head everywhere. Just very good, dynamic type of fighter. Broner didn't look like he won a round. I mean, there are people talking, saying this is a fight of the night quality fight or a fight of the year quality fight. I don't think that. The other guy has to give something to give a fight. And I don't think Broner really looked great any time during the fight. Didn't look like he had Maidana ever hurt. And Maidana really tuned him up good. Actually, his best performance was after he got clubbed with the headbutt and he rolled around on the ground for a couple of minutes. I saw only a 15-minute clip of the whole fight, but, man, I almost laughed out loud when he got hit and then he waited like 10 seconds and then he rolled around on the ground. I mean, that was a tough end of the fight.
I only regret Broner getting beat up like that is I wanted to see it happen by Danny Garcia. Because I think Garcia is a better skill fighter than Maidana. Maidana's tough. And there's no taking that away from him. He's a tough fighter. But I think Garcia is a more skilled fighter, for one. And I think he would have finished the job, especially with that big left hook. But also, I would have loved to have seen the pre-fight press conferences when Broner tried to talk shit, what Angel would do to him. Angel would have shut him up in a matter of seconds.
Well, he's a little more humble now. We have Psychic Tom with us.
Yes, sir. I'm just sitting here enjoying the analysis of Broner, and we'll see how he responds from this setback. What do you guys? What's your gut feeling on how he'll come back, or will he come back?
Oh, he'll be back. I just don't think he's going to be as a superstar.
Yeah,
he'll come back, but I see him as being. We always call him like a poor man's Floyd Mayweather because he obviously was Mayweather's toady. I always the Broner reminded me of a little kid in the Christmas story, the one that was the bully sidekick, like always hang out with the bully, and I'm not saying Mayweather was a bully, but hang out with the bully because he was afraid of him, and that was his way of being protected, and that was his way of, you know, being able to run his mouth because he was, you know, with Mayweather, but also he would never have to fight his quote-unquote best friend. And so Broner got humbled bad, and I found it very funny. And like I said, Tom, I was saying, I don't know if you heard it, I've rarely seen so many people make such universal fun of a fighter for getting beat as people did with Broner. Because he's just so universally disliked. To be friendly.
Exactly. It's something about him, he just hits a nerve with people. Just off key.
He does. He really does.
Speaking of nerves, another story I have here that I'm sure you'll both enjoy. Ricardo Mayorga is done. He can't do MMA anymore. He's 0-3-1 now. He was submitted in two rounds in his last fight here, the last week, I think. Lost a rematch to a guy he also lost to on October 13th. By three-round split decision, first time. This Saturday's fight was Mayorga's fourth MMA fight. Of course, we know he had the no contest on the first fight. And then he got choked out by Rene Martinez, who was 5-0 at the time, down there in Managua. And now he's going to plan to return to boxing, he says. 40 years old, he's going to be coming back to boxing and he says, I want to thank everyone who supported me with MMA, the referees, the Federation of Mixed Martial Arts. I will return to my sport, boxing, and I will win a fourth world title. You're right. Good luck with that.
Good luck. Good luck. Wow. Yeah. You know, it's kind of sad in his case. I mean, he has the mindset of a guy that could succeed in MMA with that style of his. That I just flash back on that rematch with Vernon Forrest, how he just had that insane physicality. And I remember thinking as I was watching, I said, well, if he'd ever like to do both sports, I really had it pegged wrong. And maybe he just has not put in the time with the jiu-jitsu or the takedown defense, but kind of hate to hear this in a sense because he's just always been one of those fascinating people. And when he fights, you got to see him. At least I do. But see how he does if he goes back to boxing.
And in other boxing fight news, we had, I had mentioned Bobby Gunn last week, trying to get him on, and I forgot that actually he had a fight last night, so probably wouldn't have been good to have him on tonight. And he lost the fight and retired. He lost the fight against Ben Johnson and ultimately decided to retire because he had a decision loss for him. Got a cut on the nose and just got out-punched, basically, from what I've read. So he's going to retire, and he's going to concentrate on helping his son get into boxing. So we're going to be watching Bobby Gunn Jr. coming up tonight. We'll have him on the show one of these days. He also said he wanted to try to clean up the sport as far as how fighters get treated and do something about that. He's managed himself for a long time. He's obviously, we know, gone into bare-knuckle boxing, back to boxing, around and a lot of good stuff. So see what happens there. But also another former guest of ours, Glenn Johnson, has to congratulate for another win. This is his 58th win in his career. Good job there. And I guess having said that, Gunn is not going to fight Roy Jones Jr. Who gave up the chance to fight there. And who could blame him, really? I mean, I'm not, doubting Bobby Gunn's skills or anything, but, when you have an opportunity to travel to Russia to fight a guy who's active in the game and ranked and everything, or, you can fight in basically your own home state there, what are you going to do? Going to want to travel the world, right?
I guess. I mean, wouldn't you rather come to beautiful Philadelphia and fight in the Armory?
I don't know where the fight was, but it was definitely in Pennsylvania.
It was in Philadelphia. It was supposed to be the National Guard Armory, which is in northeast Philadelphia. I've covered fights there a number of times.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. So I guess we'll never see that fight, but like I talked about last week, there's still a chance for Anderson Silva versus Roy Jones. So I think that will be a quicker fight. Oh, boy. Anyway, boxing news continues here with this story. We have Vitaly Klitschko leaving boxing to champion the cause of Ukrainian dissidents. There's massive social unrest going on over there in the Ukraine, and Vitaly Klitschko has been in the news the last few weeks. I haven't really mentioned it. I saw it in a lot of updates and stuff, but I really didn't think much of it until now, where he's actually quit boxing. He's going to be the champion emeritus for a while. He's trying to run for president over there. They're trying to block him, and he's basically he's become sort of figurehead of sorts for the protesters, and they really stand behind him. So he's definitely feeling the call to action there. He says, "I feel people need me there," and definitely taking a big step here into politics, especially when you have the powers that be over there in the way they operate. As anybody who's familiar with history knows, it's not always great to protest those kind of governments. But he's out there in the public eye, gaining a lot of attention and worldwide news press. And good for him, if he has that platform and he's going to And, you know, from what I've read, it's pretty impressive over there. So he's going to bring some Western flair there from what he's seen over here in the free United States of America. Bring a lot of that over there. So I don't know what they're going to do with the title. I don't know whether they're going to have an interim title or what. And he has more than one title, doesn't he? Vitaly?
Well, he really only has one, I think it was a WBC title. Vladimir is the one that has several.
Yeah, I guess it says here he must defend his WBC heavyweight title sometime next year for the first time since 2012 or vacate the title completely. So.
And I know Vladimir now said that he wants to take a shot at that title so he can, have all the titles.
So basically this means somebody else will fight for the title. Sounds like, and then he can directly challenge the new heavyweight champ if he decides to come back to boxing. So, and one other boxing article here I wanted to talk about before we get into all the MMA stuff. Plenty to talk about there. Danny Green is back in the news. 40 years old, he hinted in a recent article that his days in professional boxing were all but over. He says he hasn't fought since I won the world title on November 21st, 2012, and I most probably won't fight again. I don't like saying that, and if you've been successful, boxing is one of the most addictive sports. I'm still physically in very good condition. I train most days. Mentally, I still have the desire as well, but I've got to be smart and look further down the track. My kids are nearly 6 and nearly 12 now, and hopefully I have many more years left in my life, and I want to make sure there's years left in my productive. So I guess they're trying to get a rematch with him and Anthony Mundine. But he says there's as much chance of me fighting Muhammad Ali. So he says, yeah, I lost to him, but I should have been knocked unconscious with the condition I was in. I had to lose over 10 kilograms off a frame that shouldn't have lost 4 kilograms. I lost the fight, yes, but moving up to weight division since then, I've achieved more than he has. Even though I got knocked out twice, I earned the respect of the boxing public and took on guys who were dangerous fighters. So... he's had several offers to fight this year, but just hasn't taken any. In all reality, the offers have been from people looking to gain publicity for themselves by calling me out. Their offers had no substance, and there was nothing serious about it. I've offered someone millions of dollars to fight, and if you want to fight someone, you make them an offer with money and not hot air. For me to come back would have to be a fight that people really want to see and a fight that makes financial sense. So that's it there. Big news this week in MMA. We didn't get to talk about it last week because it happened the day after our show, but George St. Pierre is out indefinitely. Definitely for absence. And, he's willing to give up the title like we talked about. He probably should do if he's going to walk away. I don't think he's going to get the champion emeritus status that Vitaly got. But he made the announcement on a Friday afternoon conference call with President Dana White, and he said, I've been in this sport for a long time. I know the UFC is a business, but right now I need to take a break. One day when I feel like it, I might come back. And White announced that St. Pierre's now vacant championship would be up for grabs on March 15th when Johnny Hendricks takes on Robbie Lawler at UFC 171. And also that fight will be the card's main event. So Hendricks will have a second crack at the belt, just won't be against George St. Pierre. And St. Pierre actually said that he made this decision way before the fight with Hendricks. He also said, quote, it's like every fight I am carrying weight on my shoulders. And with every fight you add weight. So at some point it becomes hard for me to carry it. mentally, I just feel like I cannot go through another training camp right now, and I don't know when I will be able to again, and I don't want to make the UFC wait. So I will vacate my title. And someday when I come back, I won't have the red stickers on my glove. I will have the blue sticker, and I will be the challenger. So apparently they put red and blue stickers on fighters' gloves. I don't know that. White City has a lot of personal issues. St. Pierre, this is fighting, and you have to be 100%, and if you aren't, you should sit on the sidelines until you get your stuff cleared up. St. Pierre said he's going to continue training and getting better, but will also live a normal life without the pressures that a full training camp and media obligations bring. There's no details yet about what exactly these personal problems he has are, and he's not talking about it specifically, so I don't think it's going to come out unless he wants it to. So we'll see.
Yeah, all we can do is wish him the best. I mean, I suspect that there's something, there's a whole lot we don't know, a whole lot. Just hope he gets everything taken care of, and hopefully we'll see him again. And if we don't, my feeling is he doesn't owe anyone anything. He's been a great champion, and I hope he enjoys his retirement if he doesn't come back. But from a fan standpoint, I'd love to see him back.
Well, I think this is a Floyd Mayweather retirement. when Floyd retired and came back, that's probably what's going to happen here. Take a year or two off, and he'll be back at it again. I don't think he can stay away. So that's been big news. People are talking about, you know, who's going to be the new face of the UFC once he's gone. All kinds of people speculating on, why he's out and whether he's going to come back and the works, basically. But interestingly enough, Ronda Rousey came out and spoke about this. And she had some interesting comments. She says, we're not really doing 9-to-5 or sitting down in a cubicle. If you fight for a living, you're fighting for your life every time you go in there. It's a stressful situation if you think about it. The worst thing that can happen in your day isn't that someone will get your latte wrong or that you might get fired. It's that you could really get physically harmed. And not just that, but your pride could get irrevocably harmed as well. And that's a lot of stress to really face time and time again. And it's so much that you really have to have a real love and desire for what you do. You can't really fight and put your life on the line for anyone other than yourself. And every single time a new fight comes along, you need to ask yourself whether you still want that. So she asks, can you really blame him for really feeling like he's done? Because nobody else had reached that point yet, so I don't think it's really reasonable to expect him to do more. If he wanted to do more, that's awesome. Break the record even more. But if he feels like he's done, that's fine, man. Be done. Go rest. You deserve it. You don't have to risk your life for anyone. And she also said that in regards to the record that he set with his win last month against Hendricks, controversial win, but he set a record of having a total UFC fight time of 5 hours, 28 minutes, and 12 seconds inside the cage, the octagon.
Wow.
5 hours, 28 minutes, 12 seconds career time. That's not just, you know, that's not his whole fight career either, because he didn't start in the UFC, so that's just the octagon. 5 hours. So, yeah, nobody else had reached that point yet, and he didn't, so a lot of fighting he's been doing, and he definitely deserves a break. But obviously, Rousey has been in the news because she's going to be facing Miesha Tate on December 28th out there in Vegas. And she's making all kinds of news, and this, she had to weigh in on this, of course. And some interesting comments there. She also, there was another article, I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw the headline today where she came out and said something about she's not going to leave a Gina Carano void. She's not going to just walk away someday and never come back. So, it's interesting. Yes, we have some UFC results to talk about. I really didn't end up watching this whole card firsthand, but I did watch the replays. And, of course, the main event wasn't much of a surprise, except for it ended in a knockout. That was a big surprise. Demetrius Johnson took out Benavidez in the first round at the 208 mark, and it was a knockout. Just completely swarmed him, hit him right on the button, and put him on his ass, and that was it.
Yeah, I could say there was definitely no controversy about that one. And this is a horrible setback for Benavidez. I mean, you really expect the puncher to do the damage, not to get KO'd like that. It's a beautiful timing. I mean, Demetrius just, I think he just adjusted on the fly and seen that he mentioned last night in an interview that he was expecting Benavidez to be a little more aggressive, and since he wasn't, he just adjusted right then and picture-perfect punch.
And we had Uriah Faber totally dismantled Michael McDonald.
Yeah, I was wrong about that one. I was definitely wrong about that one. Faber looked outstanding. I mean, this was, to me, this was the Faber that we've seen in the mid part of the last decade, you know, 2004 through 2007, when he was just on top of his game. I mean, just he just looked flawless. So this is going to be interesting to see where he's at from here. He's definitely right back in the mix, and depending on how Cruz does, Faber's maybe the boss. We'll see.
Yeah, he's definitely right up there in the title picture again. Then we had Chad Mendes beat Nick Lentz by unanimous decision. I did not watch that fight. So,
Yeah, Chad apparently had some hand problems too, I guess, but he got it done. It wasn't in his normal fashion, but he got the W, so good for him.
Then we had my buddy there, Joe Lazon from the New England area, Massachusetts, beat the crap out of Mac Danzig. Three-round battle. Hang on, I gotta let my cat out. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay, cat's out. So, Joe was on one of the unanimous decision of the Mac Danzig. Pretty good, though. A lot of good Brazilian
jiu-jitsu. Yeah, Joe didn't get the fight of the night, but he'd made a comment that considering what that's cost him in the past health-wise, I mean, I think he's tied with Anderson Silva for fight of the night or knockout or something. There's some record there. I believe fight of the night. And he said that so often he's paid such a price for it that he really wasn't too upset. I mean, I think he really dominated that fight completely. So I can see Mac Danzig. I think that's three losses in a row for him. So it does not bode well for his future with the UFC, I think, at this point.
Well, he didn't look that bad. Didn't have enough tools in the tool bag. We had Ryan LaFleur beat Cork McGee by unanimous decision. Edson Barboza beat Danny Castillo. Let's see what that was. That was a majority decision. And we had Bobby Green beat Pat Haley by unanimous decision. Zach Mikowski beat Scott Jorgensen by unanimous decision. Sam Stout beat Cody McKenzie by unanimous decision. Finally had a knockout. Abel Trujillo in the second fight of the night knocked out Roger Bowling with punches. And then we had another decision, split decision this time in the opening bout. Al Sakin Ozkilic, probably pronouncing that way wrong. But he beat Darren Uyenoyama. I split the station. And that's it for that one. I know we got another one coming up. I have it right in front of me. I will get that up there. Get to that. But Antonio Silva making the news because he failed his post-fight drug test for UFC Fight Night 33 and his big bout there with Mark Hunt. Failed for elevated illegal testosterone levels.
You know, of all the fighters that you would not think would need that,
right?
That's my first reaction, okay? Of all, I mean, you kind of understand it if a guy's like 220 or something. I mean, I of all people, of every single person in the UFC since Brock Lesnar, who would you think would not need more growth hormone, more testosterone, more steroids? I guess he's very upset about the result. He said he'll be appealing it and has some big issues with it. But
what I read said that today he's going to sue his doctor. But they said that there's no possible way this test result is accurate, saying he would endanger himself by taking that much because he has pre-existing acromegaly, which is
right.
Gigantism. Freaking huge Easter Island head on him, you know? So.
Right, so that's why I was just so blown away when I read that. It just sounds funny. I mean, it sounds bizarre. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think anybody looks at someone and says, that guy got to eat the ball up a little bit. But he got his $50,000 fight of the night bonus taken away. It's now going to go to Mark Hunt. And the record will now reflect a no contest on his card record, but Hunt will obtain the original result of a draw. So, it's obviously in this classic, you think it was something they'd still want to do again, but after this, it's the second time Silver failed the post-fight drug test in his career. First coming in August 2008 after an Elite XC Heavyweight Title Championship victory over Justin Eilers, who actually is now dead. Got shot years ago in a big disturbance. But Silva tested positive for Goldman in that case. That's my test result. Hunt now says he should be declared the winner of that fight as well. It would come in pretty handy, but the thing is, it wasn't about the bonus $50,000 anyway, so I don't really care about the money anyway. It's not a big deal. That's all right now we have to deal with as far as this. We've got this 9-month suspension, apparently, and this bonus. A loss on his record, it's a no contest. Hunt still gets it. So that's an interesting development. It's the first time I think in a long time it's a main event fighter in fact. Okay, here's a big one. Are you ready for the first facial male versus female fight in MMA history?
Whoa.
Male versus female. Is Chuto Brazil. They'll make history on December 20th. I think that's the same day Roy Jones Jr. is fighting that battle over in Russia. But Emerson Falco will take on Julian Velasquez at Chuto 45 in a mixed gender fight. And it's the professional MMA fight. The Shooto president has yet to explain whether any special rules will be in place. The promotion has been rather active all Tuesday morning promoting the bout via Twitter and Facebook. Along with UFC champions Jose Aldo and Renan Barão, Falco trains at Nova União under the tutelage of this should go present, seeing I have from Peter Neros in the Bantamweight Featherweight Hall of Fame professional record in April. This is in April he made his professional debut at Upper Sport Combat 2. He was submitted in the first round by Benny Black. Monday night, Falco posted on his Facebook page that he was injured and wouldn't be able to compete again until next year. But after speaking with the Shooto president, MMA fighting Ryan Falco will still be able to compete on Friday night. So he's injured if he has to fight a guy, I guess. But, oh, it's a girl. Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Well, I don't know how much they're paying him for that fight, but to me, it seems like such a no-win scenario. Because if he wins, as he should win, if he wins, it's like, well, you beat up a girl, and then you look at the invective that Brian Caraway caught after he responded to the millionth challenge from Ronda when he said he'd knock her teeth down her throat. You know, there's still people still talk about that. So the point is, if he wins the fight in the first 30 seconds, or if it even goes past the first round, that's a bad situation. And then, God forbid, if he loses, or if he doesn't end it in spectacular fashion quick. So I would think that it's like, I can't imagine taking that fight unless they're just paying him a lot of money.
Yeah, we'll see how that's... That's a weird one. Anyway, sad news out of Ontario. Mixed martial arts fighter Joe Camacho, 41 years old, from Ontario, died Monday in West Covina, California. He was at his girlfriend's residence when he began experiencing difficulty breathing. And hospital officials notified police of Camacho's death shortly before 7 a.m. The cause of death is yet to be determined. And he actually competed in Long Beach, California on Sunday for his death. So this is pretty interesting. This is the 16th this story came out, and the day before that was Sunday the 15th. So he competed in Long Beach on Sunday, and Monday morning he's dead. So definitely something to watch and see what happens. Yeah, it happened there. But his mother said his heart was in MMA. Broadcasting now. Anyway, as I was talking about Joe Camacho, I don't think he's any related to the Hectors, senior or junior. But he's obviously a big pioneer, MMA pioneer out there in California. Worked with a lot of fighters, worked with the community, and actually Uriah Faber was a friend of his. He says it's really unfortunate. He was such a great guy, a positive guy, and loves the fight game. He wasn't coming off a bunch of wins by any means, but the guy loved the sport, and he was a true mixed martial artist. Love goes out to his family. It's unfortunate that the MMA community lost another one of its soldiers. He was a true fighter, man. It's a sad thing for sure. So, it's a tough loss for sure. Julie Kennedy. Oh, here's Tom. Tom, you're back.
Yeah, we're back. Boy, all of a sudden things just faded out completely. Went completely dark. But we're back.
Yeah, it was a Blog Talk Radio thing, I think, because when I tried to call back, it's a phone network error. It wouldn't let me on back again, so it wasn't on my headphones. Anyway, Julie Kennedy, back in the news shortly after retirement here. She just left the sport officially only a little more than a week ago, but now she's already jumping right into her next career. She announced during Monday's episode of the MMA Hour that she will be using Matchmaker for Invicta Fighting Championships, which is the all-female fighting promotion that actually just got pretty much completely wiped out in their strawweight division, so the UFC could have a fighter show. But I think the rest of the divisions are pretty healthy. And now Julie's going to be the matchmaker. Exciting for her. Great to see someone pick up a job so soon after they retire. Keep it on the sport. She says, Kenzie, I am excited about this incredible new opportunity that will allow me to remain as active and hands-on as ever and contributing to the growth of women's competition in our great sport. Shannon Knapp has done an unbelievable job of pushing the envelope and transforming women's MMA into an aggressively expanding enterprise, a development that will undoubtedly lead to increased participation in the sport by young athletes, young women athletes who want to challenge themselves in the world's fastest growing sport. Yes. Now here's a great quote. I don't know if you guys heard anything about this one, but there's a story here out of New York. A Brooklyn thug hired two mixed martial arts fighters to help him collect a debt from a poker player for a $100 million gambling racket. $100 million gambling racket linked to Russian mobsters. This guy is a real winner. A guy named Kirill Rappaport, 41 years old. He used threats of violence to force losers to pay up. He's pleaded guilty to running poker games in Manhattan after being one of more than 30 people charged in April over the gambling operation. He's expected to face at least 6 months behind bars. And when he was arrested, he was found with brass knuckles in his chest of drawers and an inoperable gun in his apartment. These weapons are the tools of the trade for an enforcer who threatens to use the use of force to collect debts, prosecutors said. They say the Rappaport worked with Arthur Azen, 44, from Staten Island, who admitted money laundering, conspiracy, and extortionate credit collection last month. Rappaport was not a dealer or a bartender. His job was to make sure that bettors of Azen's illegal poker games and bettors of Azen's sports book paid their debts, the letter adds. Prosecutors say Rappaport and Azen were accompanied by two MMA fighters when they were spotted by FBI agents in October last year, meeting a poker player who appeared to be delinquent in paying his debts. Concerned they may harm the player but not wishing to blow their cover, the agents asked the New York City Police Department to intervene on the pretense they had reports of someone smoking marijuana in the area. The player later admitted that he owed $35,000 to $40,000. And Rappaport's lawyer, Jay Schwitzman, claimed in August that his client had been targeted by the feds because of his busted background.
I wonder how much ammunition this is going to give the anti-MMA politicians that are doing everything they can to keep the sport out of New York.
Right.
You know, I mean, why not two football players? Why couldn't it be hired two bodybuilders, you know, two power lifters? No, got to be two MMA guys, you know, great. Just what's needed.
Well, I was going to say, sounds like a job for Fedor's brother, Alexander.
Yeah.
He likes the thug. Talk about shooting people.
I think he has his hands full over in his motherland. I don't think he needs to come here. And I think he's probably got plenty of work where he's from.
Well, it is what it is, I guess. So what do we got coming up this weekend for boxing, Tony? Anything?
Weekend before Christmas. Let's see. Good question. I don't know, I'm working this weekend, so... I'm so busy. Let's take a look. See what we got in the world of boxing coming up. I was disappointed I had to miss last weekend fight. And like one of our former guests, Keith One-Time Thurman, he looked pretty good. As you said, the Karras, he's a tough fighter. I've covered him. Not a lot of skills, but a rough, tough guy. And he had Thurman hurt. So when Thurman broke through finally, I mean, he really busted him up pretty good. So let's go and do a search for Saturday night. Hey, in a few weeks, we can rejoice at the fact that Friday Night Fights will be back on for their 8 or 9 month run. I always find enjoyable. Keeps me out of trouble.
You're such a troublemaker. Yeah, your whole life.
Yeah, Tony, what's the date that the Friday Night Fights will be back? When is that coming up?
I know it's starting in January. I'm not sure of the date, though, the exact date.
Yeah, because it's usually the first Friday in January, I would guess. I just wondered if there'd been any change that you heard of.
Okay, looking at fights for this weekend, the only major real fight going on is the one we talked about earlier, Moscow, Russia, Roy Jones Jr. And I'm going to try to pronounce his opponent's name. Roy is 56-8, 40 knockouts. He is on a 2-fight win streak. He beat Max Alexander about 2 years ago. And actually, Roy hasn't fought about a year and a half. His last fight was June of 2012 against Paweł Gwiazdowski in Poland, and he won a split decision on that. So his fight, he beat Max Alexander, won every round versus him. And then that was on the heels of 3 straight losses. A devastating knockout loss in May of 2011 to Denis Bebedev, a decision loss in April of 2010 to Bernard Hopkins, and a knockout loss in one round to Danny Green in Australia in 2009. So, Roy's in a two-fight win streak. But like I said, I've seen Max Alexander. I know Max Alexander. Nice enough kid, but, you know, he's not a guy that's going to set the world on fire, even when he's on the contender. I don't know anything about how well Gwiazdowski, because he was undefeated coming into the fight, and it was a split decision. Roy's opponent is Vinay Adin Benkamlov, 17-3, one draw, 8 knockouts, and they're fighting in Moscow. I can say I honestly know nothing about this fighter. He's 6'3", so he's going to have a little bit of height on Roy. And his last fight was a stoppage, but yeah, it doesn't mean he has a whole lot of power. So that might be a good thing for Roy. And really, that's really it for this weekend. They got one card in Broomall, Pennsylvania, which is southwest Philadelphia area, Chester County. That's Saturday night. I'm working, so I'm not going to be able to get down there. The only real name on the card is Tim Witherspoon's in there. And I know the one kid playing one of them, Anthony Abruzze. I don't know him, but a friend of mine posted a picture on him that I wish him luck in his pro debut this weekend. So that's really it for this weekend overall.
I got one here from Lombardia, Italy, on Saturday. It's probably not going to be on any station you can get here, unless you're really good with computers or whatever. But anyway, this is for the EVE light welterweight title in the main event. Michelle, or Michael, however you pronounce that, Miracco, 35-1-1, 15 knockouts, fighting Billy Fitzman, with 17-3-6 knockouts. Also on this card, fighting in a six-rounder, believe it or not, is Gianluca Branco, who is 47-20, one draw, 23 knockouts. He's fighting the formidable Konstantin Sakara, who is 13-29, two draws, 11 knockouts. So this is obviously a tune-up fight for Branco, I would think. I'm trying to get his leg done there. I'm just trying to fight in this home country. Get a paycheck. So that is the best match I've ever heard. But I guess so, since we don't have any other candidates right now. Let's see what else we got. Here's an interesting one from Valenciana, Spain on Saturday. Got the IBF Super Bantamweight title up for grabs here. Kiko Martinez, 29-4 with 21 knockouts, fighting Jeffrey Mathingala, who is 27-4-2 with 14 knockouts. That is really only final card. Everybody else has 20 wins or less. A lot of them on the left side. Vacant IBF Bantamweight title is also on the line over in Yorkshire, United Kingdom, Saturday. Main event there is Stuart Hall, 15-2-1 with 7 knockouts. And he's fighting Lucy Malinga, who's 21-4-1. 12 knockouts, and again, that's for the vacant IBF Bantamweight title. We also have undefeated Frank Gavin, 17-0, with 12 knockouts, fighting Juliano Ramos. We got Lewis Taylor and Max Maxwell, the middleweight 10-rounder. Taylor with 1 knockout, Maxwell with 16. Paul McCloskey, also on that prize, two with 12 knockouts, fighting Dave Ryan, the late most white fight, 14-3 knockouts. This is an interesting lightweight eight-rounder, Femi Fihintola, 24-2 with 1 knockout, fighting Gary Sykes, who's 25-3 with 5 knockouts. It's pretty interesting card all around, a lot of good fights. And here's one you missed right in your backyard, Tony. Tim Witherspoon Jr.
Didn't you say that?
Yeah. You mentioned that?
Tim
3-1. This is Boomball's fight of the week. He's fighting Jesus Barbara. 4-4-1. Not much of a card here. Everybody but the main event has less than 5 total fights. Well, 6. One guy's 4-1-1. Well, this is funny. Okay, so Tim Witherspoon Jr. is fighting Jesus Barbosa. And leading off the night is a fight with Alex Barbosa. Brothers and sister. And a son. Two sons. Lonnie Jackson Jr. is also one. Thank you. got anything else going on here. So we're into Sunday. Sunday. Nothing going on Sunday. Except for football.
Legends. You know, last week at our lot, we decided to have Santa Claus, and two of the workers pelted him with snowballs.
Well, I heard they had a big Santa Claus convention in New York City, and they had to warn the participants about drinking while in uniform.
That's awesome.
There's been a lot of drunken
escapades
at Santa
convention. People don't realize Santa drinks. What's the problem? Because to put up with that many kids, you got to drink.
Right. But apparently it's more than drinking. It's lewd and lascivious behavior. In addition to the drinking. Which the drinking usually brings out, right?
Yeah.
So you got to deal with it. All right, let's see. We got in our Google alerts for the day. Big stories.
Oh, and Rich, do you have any comments about Matt Danzig's lack of sponsorship? Did you see that fight with Joe Lozon?
You know, I was watching that fight, and I saw the "not for sale" on the back of his shorts.
Yeah. How about that?
We gotta talk about that. And I pictured in my mind's eye, believe it or not, you asking me about it because I was gonna forget it. And that's exactly what happened. But yeah, I did notice that. It was kind of hard not to notice, and I wondered about that because, like you said, he'd lost a couple fights in a row. Maybe they thought this is his last fight, and so they didn't want to sponsor him, but at the same time, maybe he's also trying to make a statement of some sort by saying that nobody owns him. I don't know if, you know, a shot at the UFC or anything like that, but it's definitely intriguing. I never see anything like that. And I didn't really see anything about it either, which surprised me. You'd think there'd be one story, at least, with somebody explaining, you know, his remarks about why he did that, or, you know, somebody asked him the question. I had to have asked him the question at some point.
Yeah, well, on the forum, in the news section, Joe Lozon has some comments about the whole sponsorship issue. And apparently, Joe was mentioning there's good and bad in it, and he thought that the good was, for some reason, he thought it kept some of the smaller T-shirt companies out of the equation. But then he was saying that the bad is it is a pretty... it's kind of like, I don't know, you'd have to read it. I was a little confused after it. It was almost like what was good was bad. But Joe, apparently there's a list of approved sponsors. And that's pretty much it from the impression I got from reading what Joe was saying. Now, maybe you know more about this than I do, but I guess you can go to these sponsors and hopefully they'll sponsor you. But it's just a certain list, and it's just the big boys that have apparently paid the fee, which I guess is quite substantial to be on that list. That's why it's a small list.
I think when they first started doing that, it was like $50,000 they had to pay. I remember a company coming up to me and asking me if there was any way around it at that time. And I said, there, I think there is, but, you know, it all depends on who you know and you know, what kind of sponsorship you're looking to do. You know, if you want to throw an event for a guy, I don't think they can charge you $50,000 to just, you know, bring a guy in and parade him around. But if you're going to put your name on his shorts, you know, it's going to cost you. He's going to go in the octagon wearing something with your name on it. That's really big, yeah. So, it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast, but, you know, it does cause problems for a lot of lower-level guys. Nobody wants to pay $50,000 and then pay something on top of that to a fighter who's just going to be in the prelims. You know, they're not trying to advertise on Facebook or whatever. You know, we're seeing a lot of these fights with injuries. And, you know, you've got this situation with George St. Pierre and Ronda Rousey also coming out in support of his decision. And John Jones even coming out with statements about wanting to retire when he's 30. Because I think what we're seeing is people are really starting to realize what a career in mixed martial arts does to a person. Especially in a situation like George St. Pierre's, where he's had a number of title defenses, five-round fights in most cases, because he doesn't really get a lot of knockouts. And, you know, that takes a toll on the human body, taking that much punishment. Obviously, the UFC is the top level. The best of the best are in there. So you're going to have way better chances of fights there causing injuries because, you know, these guys are capable of beating each other up badly. And I think it's going to really change the whole landscape of the sport. You start having situations that could result in lawsuits like the NFL has dealt with. The NHL is dealing with it now with concussions as well, and even baseball. There's been a big story all week about a baseball player, Friel, killed himself. And, you know, he had a bunch of concussions over the course of his career. So, I mean, this has caused problems with guys, even in baseball. Obviously, MMA is going to run into a brick wall if there's no pun intended there. But, yeah, they're going to have a huge issue with brain injury. And not only brain injury, but just injuries in general. You look at the fight there with Silva and Hunt, both guys were pretty banged up after that fight.
Well, and I know there was a recent interview with Forrest Griffin, and he was describing the condition that he's in. And he's right-handed, and he said he has to brush his teeth with his left hand. He not only can't throw a baseball or a football with his right hand, he can't even brush his teeth. And he was talking about all his other problems, and he said that he'd like to continue. If he had his career choice, he would still be fighting. But the problem is for him, it's just a physical impossibility at this point. And Forrest, I believe, is mid-30s. I don't think he's that old.
Right. Well, speaking of old, 51-year-old heavyweight champ, former heavyweight champ, Evander Holyfield is not going back into boxing, but he is going to be back in the spotlight because he's going to work on a show called Celebrity Big Brother. I'm sure you guys
know
the Big Brother. But he's drafted for Celebrity Big Brother 2014 there. I guess it's a UK thing because this is an article in the Daily Star over there in the UK. And the lineup is going to include Sam Fares, Dappy, and Lee Ryan, none of which I've ever heard of. So it must be.
Yeah.
Must be a UK deal. But, of course, the headline says, here we go. and it's going to be a six-figure deal, so hopefully he shares some of the love there with his family. You know, he's got major child support debts. That's what we're usually talking about holy family because of, so I'm sure part of the reason he's doing this is for the money. This website has an article that claims Aaron Hernandez is a prison pimp as well. Former Patriots star. I wouldn't doubt it. Anyway, Holyfield did officially retire, apparently, according to this article. While rumors are sparking up that there will be a Howie takeover of the house with both Sam Thayers and Lucy Mecklenburg, the top contenders, to become housemates. I don't know any of these people you're talking about. So we'll see how that goes for Evander. Good luck to him. We'll see. Definitely a safe way to make a living. I don't see him being very entertaining, though, in the house.
Yeah, I always liked Evander as a fighter, but that's the main thing being that entertaining. Not as entertaining as some other guys would be. I'll just look at being entertaining as shit. Mike Tyson, scary entertaining. Floyd Mayweather entertaining. A lot of those guys. Sanders, come on. Ali and his time would have been funnier than hell.
Alright, well, here's a little story. You talked about Friday Night Fights coming back. Well, we got a little press release here about the makeup of that card. January 10th, from the Emerald Queen Casino, we got a familiar name that we've talked about before on the show, Arash Usmani, who was part of a very controversial decision last year against Ramses Barthelemy, a fight I thought he won. He dropped his first loss, so he's now 20 wins, one loss, one draw, 10 knockouts. And he's ranked number 8 by the IBF from Afghanistan, but lives in Canada, Arash Usmani. And a hell of a fighter. I thought he did a real good job against Barthelemy, but the judges gave it to Barthelemy. It was really a hometown cooking situation. I think it was one of the fights that Kenny Atlas was more incensed about than most. And he really, really got pissed talking about the bad decisions in boxing after that fight. But anyway, this time around, Usmani is not going to be facing another undefeated fighter. This time he'll be facing Juan Antonio Rodriguez, who's 25-4, but he had 23 knockouts, almost 25 wins. And that's at featherweight, so that should be scary to Usmani. He's going to have to keep his hands up in this one. He's obviously more of a finesse than a power puncher compared to Rodriguez. So this is going to be a 10-round super featherweight fight. It's obviously going to put one of these guys back in big-time title contention. See how that turns out. The televised co-feature will be Eric Morales, Conqueror, Zahir Rahim, 34-3 with 21 knockouts. And he's a former Philadelphian.
Yeah, I know Zahir. I saw him a couple years ago, shortly after he came out of the Olympics. I was talking to him down outside of a fight card, amateur fight card. And then I said, you remember that's the big break that he needed? A very skilled fighter, not a big puncher, but like I said, he boxed years off Eric Morales.
And he's fighting the ever formidable TBA, tough guy. and also on the card, cruiserweight contender Latif KO'd, who's 19-0 with 15 knockouts. This is his second fight at heavyweight. No word on who he's facing just yet. So that's out in Tacoma, Washington on January 10th. It's called Battle at the Boat 94. So, Friday Night Fights will be beginning again. Also, unbeaten junior middleweights John Thompson and Frank Galarzo fighting in the co-feature. Fast-rising Antoine Douglas will be fighting unbeaten Marquise Davis. So, we've got the first headlining fight is going to be Tony and Ivan Redcatch. I mentioned earlier, Redcatch is 15-0 with 13 knockouts. He's 17-1 with 7 knockouts. And as I mentioned, we've got a couple undefeated fighters in the co-main event. Junior middleweight John Thompson, 14-0 with 5 knockouts. And Frank Galarza, 11-2 with 7 knockouts. We have Antoine Douglas, who's 11-0 with 7 knockouts. We'll fight Marquise Davis, who's 8-0-2 with 5 knockouts. And the first fight of the night will be Maurice Hooker, 12-0-1 with 9 knockouts against an opponent to be announced. It'll be an 8-round fight. The card is promoted by Debella Entertainment in association with GH3 Promotions, Greg Cohen Promotions, and Prize Fight Boxing. It's going to be coming from the Cook Convention Center in Memphis, Tennessee, starting at 10 p.m. That's going to kick off the 2014 Showbox. So looking forward to that one. What else is going on? And speaking of Usmani, we just talked about Rosh Usmani. His former opponent there, Barthelemy, is going to have his own big fight coming up on January 3rd, a few days before his old foe there. He's the IBF, or the IBF junior lightweight world champion, Arguinis Mendez, who's 21-2-1 with 11 knockouts. He has actually vowed not to leave the outcome of his January 3rd title defense against Barthelemy to the judges. Not going to leave it in the hands of the judges. Barthelemy is 19-0 with 12 knockouts. And this is just going to be, Rand says, his first chance at a big title here, IBF title. This is his second world title defense for Mendez. He actually had a 12-round draw with Garash Usmani last August. Another controversial fight for Usmani, in which most observers felt Mendez clearly won. the first event ever presented by his promoter, which was Iron Mike Productions, Mike Tyson. So obviously, Guzman is known for close fights, but Barthelemy's going to be a different story here. It's going to be a good fight. I've seen Barthelemy fight a few times, but you know, only recently has he started taking fights that challenge him. He's kind of had a lot of pushovers at the beginning of his career. So he's done really well with that, but now he's starting to get challenged here. Alright, here's Tony Luis. How's it going, Tony?
I'm alright, yourself?
Good. Am I pronouncing that last name right? I forget.
Sort of. Lewis.
Lewis. Lewis Rich.
Tony was right. The other Tony here is on the line. Tony the Tornado. Yeah, we got Psychic Tom now. Last time you were on the show, we didn't have Psychic Tom.
How you doing,
okay.
Tony?
I'm good.
If you got the lottery where you are, you know, he's going to give you his numbers. All right, Tony, so you got a big fight coming up. We just talked about it. Big showbox opportunity there. Starting off next year against a guy named Ivan Redkach, who's 15-0 with 13 knockouts. What do you know about this guy?
He's a tall, power-punching southpaw. I know he brings a lot of power, and if you stand right in front of him, it's a dangerous fight for anybody. The height is going to be a factor, the southpaw advantage. He has the amateur background, so he has everything it takes to make an exciting, tough fight.
And how many rounds is this one going to be?
10.
10 rounds?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what do you think about this opportunity to fight on Showtime?
The comeback comes full circle for me January 17th. It's
right.
Fitting that it's going to be exactly 12 months since my first loss. And it's a week after my birthday. It marks a year since my first loss. It's a great way and against a great opponent to come back and redeem myself.
All right. Well, I mean, a lot of people who saw that first loss would say that you know, he probably would have won that fight if it ended up going to the cards. So, you know, it's really, right. Redeeming yourself, just picking yourself back up and dusting yourself off. I think he did a great job.
Well, that was, you know, like I've said repeatedly in other interviews when I'm asked about that fight. It was a great fight. It was a good TV fight. But it was a fight that I made unnecessarily, you know, harder than it had to be because I chose to come right forward and play and do his game plan. And if I fight like that against Ivan Redkach, you know, I could potentially lose again. And it's there's other ways to... There's more than one way to skin a cat, and this fight here, I don't plan on being a sitting duck, staying in the pocket.
And this is the first undefeated fighter you've ever faced, so it's obviously got to be a concern there, being a guy who was undefeated yourself for that loss. What's that like going into this fight, knowing you got a guy who's never been beat before and has only...
doesn't concern me one bit. It doesn't concern me at all, because... First, I've seen a handful of his fights, and I know what kind of opposition he's been up against, and even some of his better opposition he's fought. Like I've read in various articles that one of the opponents they like to highlight that he's beaten is Tibor Brosh, who's a Canadian, who I know very well. And with all due respect to Tibor, I have nothing bad to say about Tibor at all, but I am not Tibor Brosh, and I know what kind of opposition he's been up against because I was fighting the same kind of guys coming up that also puffed up my undefeated record. But there was a time in my career, though, as I moved up where I started fighting tougher competition gradually, whereas it seems like he hasn't. He's kind of jumping from point A to point D. So to me, you know, numbers are numbers. I don't want to get caught up in numbers, but I just pay attention to the fighter, and what I see is a very tall, strong southpaw who brings a lot of power and skills, and you know, but there's, you know, everybody has chinks in their armor, and 10 rounds can, is a long night for anyone.
All right. And what would you say is your, go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, you know, looking at, you know, some of the guys I've got coming on, well, the one fighter, and I know we talked about this a couple of years ago, it sticks out in my mind, only because I've seen him fight a couple of times in person. I've covered a couple of his fights.
Oh, sorry, man. It's not to cut you off, but I'm having a really hard time hearing you. You seem to be, your voice is really blurry on the other line.
Is this any better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay, yeah. One of the fighters that I saw, you talking about, you know, fighting guys that are tough competition. One fighter that I noticed that you fought, that we spoke about this a couple of years ago, was Aldo Valpiera. And I don't know Aldo personally, but I do, I've covered a couple of his fights when he came to Philadelphia, and he took on a guy that was a title challenger multiple times and then by the name of Rogers Mataguá. And Rogers was a very good friend of mine. We used to train together. And I saw him and Aldo go tooth and nail. And the fact, you know, going 8 rounds with a guy like that, and he's going to be in your face for 8 rounds, that's, I mean, it's a learning experience. I know it was a close fight, but I know his fights with Rogers were both very close fights. I think they were both 1 or 2 point unanimous decisions that came down to the last 2 rounds. That's the experience that, you know, a lot of guys need stepping up. If you don't take guys on like Aldo Valtierra, you know, and when things get tough, you never know how you're
going to
react.
Well, I agree. And when I was getting ready for Aldo Valtierra, the fights with Roger Mataguá were some of the fights I was studying. So I'm very familiar with how he did with Mataguá. Those were two very close competitive fights. And he also fought. I think he had also gone the distance with another prospect from New York, Jorge Luis Turan, before I fought him. And before I fought Valtierra, those two other back-to-back fights I had prior to fighting Valtierra were against Adrian Verdugo and Adrian Valdez, which was a knockout on ESPN. And Adrian Valdez, just a couple years earlier, had gone 10 rounds with Robert Guerrero on a Showbox event, I believe. And that was a fifth-round KO. And then I fought Verdugo maybe 3 months later. And Adrian Verdugo at the time was 14-1 with 11 knockouts and not... I won a clear 8-round unanimous decision. I just outboxed him and used my speed and shut him out. And then a month later, he lost a majority decision to another Canadian fighter named Logan McGuinness. And then maybe half a year later, he went 7 hard rounds with Jorge Linera. So, you know, these were some of the guys that I learned on and developed, and they got me ready to you know, to come up to the next level.
And these are
guys that I believe that these are types of fighters that I believe that Red Catch has not fought up until January 17th.
Great. And what's your ultimate goal with boxing in general?
To reach the pinnacle, to be a world champion. If my goal is not to be a world champion, then I don't belong in the sport.
And is there anybody in particular out there that has a title right now that you really want to face next, if you had the chance?
My focus is on Ivan Redcatch, January 17th.
Good answer. It's always a good sign that you're on the right track when you don't want to talk about who's next. Give us a little bit of a background on how you got into the fight game to begin with.
I was, as a youngster, I was in martial arts for about 5 years, and then I gradually just shifted over to boxing when I was 11 or 12. My father was a third-degree black belt and one of my senseis, but he also had the opportunity to start teaching boxing at a fitness center, and I just decided to follow him, but I had already found tapes. He had a massive fight collection in his basement, and I decided to root through them one day as a young kid, and I started watching them, and I fell in love with the sport, mimicking my favorite fighters in front of the TV, and then I just started applying what I was learning on those tapes to the boxing gym whenever I follow my dad, and from there I just it came very natural to me. I picked it up and I just kept going with it.
Well, I guess now I got to ask you, what were some of your favorite fights that he had there? You like to watch a lot.
At the time, I think the very, very first tape was a Mike Tyson video, but obviously my favorite fighters became Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, Sugar Ray Leonard. I immediately became drawn to their styles, and those were guys that I looked up to quite a bit growing up.
Alright. And do you have a favorite punch?
Left hook to the body.
Alright. That's one of my favorites too. Left hook, that's a Mike Tyson. That's a good thing to learn from Mike Tyson, the left hook.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. Okay. His favorite knockout shots. Not necessarily to the body for him.
No, but he, his favorite knockout blows was the right hook to the body and then the uppercut upstairs. If you were still on your feet, then he'd follow up with the left hook.
We saw Frank Bruno about that one twice.
Yeah, they were just showing one of his fights on the ESPN Classic. What's the scene up there in Canada? Boxing, is it been pretty easy to find places to train and fights up there?
Montreal is the hotbed for Canadian boxing. It's Vegas North. We have lots of plenty of up and coming prospects coming up, and world level rank contenders. We big fight that's happening in Montreal, but it's a big fight in the boxing world. Is January 18th. January 18th, the night after my fight at the Bell Centre in Montreal, Jean Pascal against Lucien Boutte. It's a big fight in boxing. It's happening in Montreal at the Bell Centre. And then a week later, Thierry Jean, who I've sparred quite a bit with in Montreal, is fighting Lamont Peterson for the junior welterweight title. So just a few examples of Arash Usman is another lightweight contender who I've done plenty of rounds with and wars in the gym, and a good friend of mine. He's fighting a week before me. He's headlining ESPN Friday Night Fights. So you have 3-4 weeks in a row, the whole month of January, a Canadian is playing part in the big things happening in the boxing world. January 10th, Arash Usmani, me on the 17th, the following night, Pascal and Boutte, and then the following week, Thierry Jean.
Yeah, Usmani, I'm a big fan of him since he got ripped off on Friday Night Fights and stuff.
Yeah.
I saw Bartholomew a couple of times when I was at Vegas. Fought a couple of times at the Cosmopolitan out there. And I was ringside for a couple of those fights. And he never really was challenged until Usmani came along. I thought he was biting off more than he could chew when I saw that fight plan in the first place. And they announced that fight was going to happen. And then he fought him, and I think he really lost the fight, but they gave it to him because that's his promoter that was running the card, and it's his basically hometown. I think he was from Puerto Rico, but it's a fight in Florida, so you can't get much more shit.
Yeah, it was, that's, unfortunately, that's boxing, and sometimes the decision goes your way, should go your way, and it doesn't, and unfortunately, Arash was on the bad end of some politics.
Great. So how did you meet him?
Just through the amateurs. We came up in the same Canadian amateur system together. He was a little older than me. And then as pros, we just started hooking up and sparring quite a bit and helping each other out when we had fights coming up. And you know, from there we just struck a friendship, and we've always kept in touch.
Yeah, we ended up talking to his to the promoter of that fight afterwards. And, even he said, "Well, I didn't really watch the whole fight." I thought my guy
Well, the beauty of losing a fight like that was that it was on TV, so it's not like it would go unnoticed. You know, a whole nation watched it, and a whole nation saw who really won. So, evidently, he got his title shot later that year, regardless of the loss. So that tells you everything.
Right. Now, did you have any role? Obviously, your father was a role model for you with the karate and the boxing and everything. Did you have any other role models, family or otherwise, growing up that helped you out along the way?
I mean, there's been some key figures that have been involved that helped me in one form or another coming up. I think more or less my heroes and role models, with the exception of my father, were more indirect. In the sense that, you know, it was people who I watched on a TV screen or read about in books, you know.
Now, what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
Well, preparation. I mean, preparation physically and mentally and spiritually is when all those three facets are in tune and synchronizing together, you truly are unstoppable, and it all comes out fight night. You know, the fight is the easy part. Preparation is
right.
Everything.
Yep, like Floyd says, all work is easy work.
That's right. That's right.
It's
nothing fancy, you know. There's nothing fancy. There's no secret kind of voodoo thing, you know. It's just hard work. That's it. It's a very simple answer, but a very difficult thing to do.
Right. You know, when I was out in Las Vegas, I had the good fortune to be invited to a couple of Floyd's open workouts out there.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's simple, you know. It's a very small gym for a guy with that much money. He doesn't have a megaplex or anything. It's actually in a little closet, a couple of rings and some gear and some changing rooms, and that's it. And, you know, the guys walk around, you know, they're all champions already because they know they're with the right people and working on the right track, and everybody seems happy and willing to do the program and
There's not too much more that can be said. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself.
But getting back to
I've been in two training camps now with Guillermo Regundo. I was his chief sparring partner for his last fight that he just had with Joseph Ekbeko, and I was his chief sparring partner when he got ready to beat Nonito Donaire. And both those training camps, I was up there for about a month with him, training and sparring, running with him in the morning, and it's nothing fancy. There's nothing that he's doing that I wasn't already doing at home in terms of conditioning, in terms of just preparing your body and training. There's, you know, we run in the morning, we eat right, we live right, we go to bed early, we get our bag work in, we get our rounds in the gym. You know, the boxer's life is very simple on paper. You know, there's no out of this world kind of, you know, it's nothing from outer space, the routines and stuff we were doing. It was just repetition, and, you know, at a very fast, intense pace, and that's it.
So after sparring with Regundo, you think you could take him?
No comment. Regundo's a fantastic fighter, and he's a class act to be around, and it was great to share a ring with him. And you know, I learned a lot both times, and I'm looking forward to seeing him in future camps. And every time I spar with him, you know, we all have our good days and bad days in the gym, and we're constantly trying to step up from one round to the next and making adjustments. And you know, it's like chess. It's like chess at its the most, you know, highest in your face level.
Right. Tom, you got any questions? You've been too quiet.
Well, Tony, first off, I can't begin to tell you just how impressed I am with where you're at mentally for this fight. I mean, I think that so much of this game is mental, and I think people who aren't really involved in it don't appreciate the mental aspect. But I don't care what kind of shape you're in physically. If your mind's not right, forget about it. And I think what I'm so impressed with you on is you've just put you've put your loss in the past and just focusing on this fight and this fight only. You're not even concerned about anything beyond that, and I think that's the winner's mindset to it. And I think that you have the right amount of confidence. You know, you don't sound cocky about it, but you just have a good, quiet confidence. And you couldn't be in a better place mentally. And I have to assume that everything's going good physically. And I got to ask you, do you have any special mental stuff that you do, like as far as meditating or anything special, or do you just kind of rely on your training and conditioning to give you the mental confidence to get in there and your technique and experience?
I guess it would be more or less the training and conditioning, but when you're putting it that way, I would hate to say it relies just on that, because I do believe in the idea of meditation. I've never practiced actual meditation myself. I've done yoga a couple times, on my own leisure time, but it's nothing that I've really stuck to or dedicated myself to in terms of putting it into a routine. But more or less the training conditioning, but even just, you know, at home, even when I'm home, I'm working. You know, like I'm watching them, I'm studying, I'm picking things apart, I'm watching old fights that would reflect, you know, that, okay, like, that'll work against this guy. I can do what that guy just did. That'll work against the guy like Ivan Redcatch. You know, like, when I'm home and he's sleeping, I'm working, you know.
Right.
And that's as much impact my training as the work I do inside the gym. And even just, even just constantly, prayer and visualizing. I mean, I can be at work, like, I'm at work right now, but, like, I can be at work, and if I get some downtime, I'm visualizing constantly. And that in itself is also a form of meditation. So if we look at it that way, you could say I'm meditating all day, 24/7.
Sure. No, exactly. And I think that, you know, there's an old cliche, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And if you put in the work, you know, you've done everything you can possibly do. Now, one more quick thing, Tony. You know, there's so many new training methods coming up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's the guys in the old days that had to go 15 rounds just stuck with their regular road work and bag work and sparring and punch mitts and all that. Now, do you try to incorporate any of the new stuff, the plyometrics or anything like that, or are you kind of more of an old-school guy, or do you have a blend of the two?
I have a blend of the two. Like, for the most part, the boxing and road work dominates the bulk of my training routine, but I do periodically go to the gym and do some strength and conditioning, which includes pushing and pulling the sled. I chop the tire. I flip tires, the battle ropes. I do some Olympic lifting, you know, but it's if I touch weights, it's generally heavy weight, low reps, just for explosivity and power, without building mass. You know, and it's something that I do maybe just at the most maybe twice a week. But it's funny you mentioned that about the old school fighters, because a lot of fighters, like I know some fighters in particular back home, you know, on the Canadian scene, that like there's one in particular who doesn't even believe in road work anymore. He just does his strength and conditioning four times a week. That's where he gets the bulk of his cardio, he feels, and then when he comes to the gym, he spars and. Mm-hmm. He'll do a little bit of mitts, and that's it. And he does all his calisthenics and what he deems cardio in the mornings. That is, you know, part of his strength training, which I don't necessarily agree with it. He feels it's worked for him, but it's not something I would adopt for myself.
Well, I think that makes sense, because a lot of times, some people have like a cookie cutter approach to things, and I don't believe in that. I don't think there is a one size fits all. I think
exactly, I agree with that as well. You know, different strokes for different folks, and what's the other saying, that one man's treasure is another man's trash? Or is it go the other way around?
Right, exactly. And that's where I think that the blueprint for success, assuming there is one, is to keep an open mind on a lot of the new training methods and don't be afraid to try new stuff. But remember, you do only have 24 hours in the day like anyone else, and remember what's worked in the past.
Absolutely, exactly. And also rest. You know, you said there's only 24 hours in a day. We also need to, we got to get our 8 hours in of sleep.
Right.
I mean, rest is vital in training as much as anything else, and it's often overlooked, you know. But in order for your, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard makes a, he refers to this word quite a bit in his book. If you read his autobiography, he called it biorhythms. For him, everything was about his biorhythms, and if his biorhythms and his body clock wasn't in sync, you know, he knew he was going to have a bad day.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I've read a book on numerology, and it covered his biorhythms before the Marvin Hagler fight.
Right.
And it was so, wow, I mean, it was just, boy, talk about coincidence here, serendipity, how you brought that up. But, I mean, I think that is so underestimated. Like, in the old days, nutrition wasn't as important. I mean, I go back a ways. You know, back I started watching the fights with my dad back in the 1950s. That's how old I am. And back then it was all steak and eggs, and a lot of times fighters would just eat pretty much what they wanted to. And now you start to realize the importance of nutrition. You are what you eat. And a good point about the rest, that I think that in a sport as aggressive as boxing, guys tend to overtrain sometimes. And that can
absolutely
be as bad as not training enough. I mean, you don't want to leave your fight in the gym. And it's a good point you mentioned. I mean, if you're not living clean, trying to eat right, well, don't try to eat right. You just eat right and make sure you're getting enough rest. Otherwise, you're missing a piece of the puzzle. And I'm telling you, I don't think everyone nowadays is so smart and so aware of all these things that if you're cheating in one area, you got to assume your opponent's not.
Well, exactly, and that's, you have to look at it that way. You have to, and that's
right.
You know, that's what that's what builds. You know, Mike Tyson used to have an old saying. He said, "I get up at 4 a.m. to run because I know my opponent's only getting up at 5."
There you go. Yeah, that's just it. And you sound like a student of the game. So I can assume that you've really been just dissecting this whole southpaw problem, because a tall southpaw can be a nightmare fight. But,
oh, absolutely, and I'm getting ready for a nightmare, in the sense that I know I have to be at my best to win, and it's a winnable fight, but a fight that requires, you know, 100% of my dedication mentally and physically to this fight, and I can't leave no holes in my game plan.
Yeah, and I know just from sparring with the few taller southpaws, I had to always tell myself, keep throwing the jab, keep throwing the jab, keep throwing the jab, because sometimes it would seem like everything's backwards and it's just not working too well. But I think that you can't get too far out of your normal rhythm. I mean, you make a few adjustments for each fight, but you stick with what got you there. So my crystal ball is saying a lot of good things are happening in a few weeks. You heard it here first, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, Tony. And what would you say you love most about boxing?
Fighting itself. Just the artistry of fighting. The back and forth of a fight at its highest level. Two guys that know what they're doing. I mean, what else is there to love really about boxing? Negotiating, promoters, managers, money? I mean, what else is there to love about boxing? If it's not fighting, then what do you love about boxing?
Very good point. Very good point. I'm going to remember that. Yeah.
what else can we cover here? Who do you like to watch the fights nowadays? I know you talked about some of the guys from boxing history that you watched from your dad's collection, but who do you like to watch today?
Manny Pacquiao is got to be my favorite modern fighters today. Miguel Cotto, you know, obviously everybody knows that Floyd Mayweather is at the top of everyone's pound for pound list, and you have to respect and admire his artistry and everything he brings to the table. But in terms of, you know, again, I was watching a Tyson interview again not long ago, and he applauds Manny on his win over Brandon Rios, and he says he's not saying Manny Pacquiao is the best fighter in the world, but he's saying he's the most sensational fighter in the world. And that's, you know, he does things in there that not too many other fighters can do, which is catches your eye and he captivates your imagination with his style. He knows how to get you on the edge of your seat, you know, for better or worse. And that to me is that's a special ingredient that not every fighter has. Even some of the greatest fighters in history don't all have that special ingredient, but Pacquiao has it.
And is there anybody you want to thank or give a shout-out to or anything like that?
I just want to give a shout-out to my Canadian fans back home and that are that may be listening to this and or following and supporting me. And for any fans that are going to be there that night, January 17th, I'm looking to open up some eyes and give them a great fight.
All right. Well, it's been catching up with you again, and definitely look forward to seeing this next fight of yours. And I wish you good luck, but sounds like you don't need it. Working hard.
Oh, thank you very much. I am working hard. I'm getting ready for the fight of my life.
All right.
No question, Tony. I'm sure you're going to be putting on a great show. We'll sure be looking forward to watching it. And
thank you very much.
We'll be in your corner cheering for you all the way, bud.
Sounds good. And you guys all have a good Christmas. Enjoy the holidays.
You too, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Good night. Next time we talk to you, hopefully we'll be talking to a guy with a belt. I don't think you heard that part, but.
Boy, I'll tell you, there's one of the most intelligent fighters. I just love his mental approach, and a lot of guys have a good level of it, but Tony just seems so level-headed and just approaching this fight. Just how could you do anything better than what he's done?
Right.
I mean, I'm not with him in the gym, of course, but. I mean, just from talking to him, it sounds like he's really got everything lined up for this. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should definitely be a good fight. And, you know, it's definitely going to put him in title contention if he beats somebody of that caliber. Undefeated like he was not too long ago. So I'll be watching him for sure. And, you know, like we say to all these guys, this has the potential to be great. Hopefully they don't forget about us when they become famous. He makes a good point there about Canada, too. I didn't realize, you know, what kind of a fixture they are in the whole boxing scene, in Montreal in particular. So, I used to go up there every now and then when I was attending Norwich University, but I haven't been up there in a while. Never been up there for a boxing match, so. Something that I didn't realize until Tony talked about it.
Yeah, they've always been a hotbed of things, going way back. I remember going back to even the back in the 60s when Muhammad Ali couldn't fight in America for a while. He had to go on a worldwide tour. His first stop was Toronto. Yeah, so, and then Archie Moore and Evan Durrell back in, 1958, I believe. So, that, yeah, Canada's always been a hotbed. And then through the 90s, when things shifted to Quebec a lot, seen lots of, Montreal, lots of good fights there.
All right, well, till next week, I think that's all we have. I don't have any other stories to cover, no other guests tonight, so... Good show, and Merry Christmas, like Tony said. It's going to be next Thursday is going to be the day after Christmas, so you guys are going to have to tell me about all your presents that you got. Get on next time.
Okay, guys. Well, that should do it. Merry Christmas, and next time will be Happy New Year. So.
Now we're going to get, I'll try to get you guys a little advance notice next time. This one kind of came out of the blue, so.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what, it came out good. You know, as you get in the flow of things, I mean, I hadn't even had a chance to check out any of his opponents in the past, but I think everything went smooth. He was just a pleasure to have on. So, like you said, when he becomes a champ, hopefully he'll remember us. All right, guys.
Oh, he's still with us, or did he drop off? I guess he dropped off.
No, I'm still here.
Oh.
I hit the mute button.
Giving us the silent treatment.
We all know I'm not very bright.
tell all of our fans around the world how much you're going to miss them until next week.
Who's that?
Our billions of fans across the world. Tell them how much you're going to miss them next week.
Oh, I am going to miss them. You know, but hey, we'll be back next week and do a little post-Christmas show. But, what really didn't happen this past weekend, because we really got much going on, but we'll do, I guess, maybe a 2013 recap and do some stuff to come up for 2014.
Maybe we could do a special TNT segment next week, what I didn't get for Christmas that I really wanted.
Yeah, true.
We could talk about what didn't happen in boxing that you wanted to see this year, and something we could talk about what you didn't see in MMA.
I think a lot of people are just rejoicing in the fact that Warner got beat up.
Maybe you could do the positive side, too. What I did get for Christmas that I liked, what I didn't. All right, we're out of time almost, so that's it for me.
All right, guys.
Boys and girls, you have a great holiday until next week. Hasta la vista.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Good night. Adios.